Hey, everyone. You're listening to On the House with Spartan, an ad-free podcast brought to you by a full-service turnkey company. I'm your host, Lindsay Davis, CEO and co-founder of Spartan Invest. On this show, we talk about all things real estate, from market patterns, industry insight, construction, property management, and other investment avenues. We hope you'll join as we dive into today's episode of On the House with Spartan. Welcome back to another episode of On the House with Spartan Invest. I am here to welcome a guest who has been on the podcast several times before, one of our sales representatives, and he works with our investors on building their portfolio, Mr. Danny Cole. Welcome, Danny.
Hey there. How are you today?
Doing well, doing well. So we're here today to talk about short-term rentals versus long-term rentals. And if you've listened to the podcast or done any research on Spartan Invest, you know that we specialize in long-term rentals, single-family houses, the occasional duplex, some multifamily, but for the most part, you're single-family long-term. And Danny was talking a couple of weeks ago about just how many questions that he currently has incoming about short-term rentals. We all know that short-term rental popularity has grown a lot over the last few years. So we're here to talk about some of the pros and cons, just kind of from our standpoint, what we see in the market as a long-term rental provider. So Danny, start off with just, hey, what are the basic differences between your short-term and long-term rental properties?
Yeah, so we do. We get a lot of questions about that. People call in and ask if we handle short-term rentals as well as part of our business process. But as far as the short-term rental goes, you're talking about a much higher management need because the turnover on that property is going to be potentially daily, every 3 days, maybe as much as a week or two. And then you can cascade into things like midterm rentals as well, which I think it's worth noting. And that's maybe traveling nurses or people that are going to stay a bit longer. It's going to be at least 30 days, but just, again, a different situation. In the short-term rental side, your management needs, your turnover cost, and what's expected out of that short-term rental, and the cost on your front end is going to be a great deal different than a long-term rental in most cases. Whereas a long-term rental, you're going to set that tenant. You're going to place them for a year, 2 years, 3 years at a time or more. And so the daily need for that communication maybe is still there because they have needs, of course. They're living in the property and things do happen. But from a day-to-day maintenance perspective or turnover cost, it's just not there. It's just you set things into motion and they kind of ride or move along by themselves a bit easier.
What are some of the pros for short-term? I mean, you know, we just talked about a little bit of the popularity. They have blown up, especially your Airbnbs. They are all over the place. They have, especially during the pandemic, I mean, we have seen such an increase in the short-term rental space. So I would just curious, what do you think are the pros to short-term rentals?
So the pros, I mean, and the really good thing about it is the flexibility. So if you want to use that property part-time, let's just use a beach rental or a mountain rental, a cabin of sorts. If you want to use that property sometime for yourself or your family, you have that flexibility. Like with Airbnb, for instance, you can black out certain dates and say, no, you know, I'm going to be in the area. We're going to vacation that week. And so it gives you some personal use as well as being able to rent the property. And I think that's what appeals to a lot of people because it's a bit more glamorous, right? But the downside to that is a lot of people that get into short-term rentals, they're more likely to not treat it as a business. When someone buys a long-term rental, they're looking at this as like, okay, what is my cash flow? What is my appreciation? What is my principal buy down? You know, my benefits from a taxation standpoint, that's all, you're hyper-focused on that. And you know that you're not going to 123 Main Street to spend an evening or spend a night. I mean, it's just not in the cards. So it's purely for a long-term benefit. And most customers, everybody's different, so you can't just completely generalize. On a long-term benefit or a long-term investment, people are looking at that 5, 10, 15, 20-plus year investment. and they're playing that long game and truly treating it like a business. Whereas the short term, again, it's got its advantages with, you know, with the flexibility. Another advantage, you can change rents a little quicker. So when you lock somebody into a 2-year rental, they may be locked in for a minimum of a year. You may have an automatic escalator with a long-term rental, but in a short-term rental, if peak season is December or July or whatever that may be, apple festivals in the mountains, I don't know, whatever it is, you can, you know, jump that rent up to satisfy that need and demand during that time period. So you can make a bit more money there. So, you know, that can be a positive as well. And so it's just the flexibility is the big thing. But unfortunately, with long-term rentals, again, as I mentioned, people don't get into it with a business mindset in many cases. They get into it with the thought of like, we're going to the beach and now we have this beach house and this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And so they get into these properties. And a big downside to a short-term rental in many cases is going to be the cost. I mean, it's not uncommon to see that cost $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000+ in a market that generally would be inexpensive because you've got certain amenities around that market that you're trying to be close to. And if it's the beach, for instance, down in the Mobile area or Gulf Shores, for instance, you know, move your Airbnb 5 miles away from the beach and see what kind of beach attractions, you know, people or vacationers you get. It's just, you know, so you have to be hyper competitive with that. And then within that, that condo or the cabin or whatever that may be, in many cases, you're going to be looking at additional amenities because you have to stand out from the crowd. And as you mentioned, it's gotten really, the market has gotten much more saturated in these very expensive markets. And I would say to that, it's some people are getting into that because they couldn't do a long-term rental. So their obvious next, you know, choice is going to be a short-term. But the downside is there's just a lot more volatility with vacancy, et cetera. And we can get into that a bit more.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that. You know, we spend a lot of time listening to real estate experts and predictions in the industry. And what a common theme is that a lot of these Airbnb properties were overpriced, as was everything over the last few years. But they were overpurchased. And so even taking that short-term rental down to a long-term rental, in the event that the saturation of the market doesn't attract the tenants needed to make the numbers work, or that, you know, if a recession or harder times, vacations tend to dwindle. So what does that look like in regards to inventory levels, and what are those investors going to do moving forward with these properties that may not be occupied, may have a 50% occupancy? And I know there's a difference between a 50% occupancy and a 96% occupancy for long term, but what choices would they have, or how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, so that's a real concern for a lot of people, because again, many of these vacation homes and short-term rentals have been more saturated in markets that are the quote unquote sexy markets. So you get into a market that's skyrocketed in price and all of a sudden people are like, well, I'll just buy a short-term rental and that'll work better. But again, the cost is much more exaggerated. And again, they don't have a choice. You cannot pivot in most cases. Again, I can't just generalize the whole market. But in most cases, if you have a short-term rental with all the fees, all the cost, all the turnover and everything involved, it's not an easy pivot to jump into a long-term rental situation. So if it's not rented, if the occupancy is very low and you all of a sudden can't cover that $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 note, which completely wipes out in many cases in comparison to long-term rentals, the diversity that you can create as far as properties, it's going to put a lot of people in situations that maybe they're upside down. If the market, let's say you talked about an economic shift, you see an economic shift and, you know, the first thing that people are cutting out typically is vacations, you know, or would be vacations, would be, you know, extras, you know, just the frivolous toys and fun things in life that we all love, you know, it's one of those things. Are we going to the mountains this year? Are we going to the beach this year? Well, no, times are harder. The unemployment rate is higher, whatever that may be. You're going to cut those items out first. And so when you have a very saturated market in a short-term venue, and then you hit economic rough times, it can be devastating for a lot of people. And I'm not saying it will wipe the industry out, but those that tiptoed into it, number one, didn't treat it like a business. Number two, didn't have a tremendous amount of reserves for, you know, the what ifs, you know, and the big thing on that is vacancy, because in a short-term rental, you're already looking at a very, very high accelerated occupancy rate or vacancy rate, I should say. I think according to AirDNA, it was short-term rentals across the U.S. were 57-58% as far as the occupancy. And the reality of it is if somebody moves next door and they put in a spa, you know, or a pickleball court, or I don't know, a climbing wall. I mean, that sounds crazy because you just don't deal with that in the long-term rental world, but that's an amenity. And if they can put that in and it takes occupancy away from your unit, there's just a lot of factors that can create volatility there.
One thing, Danny, that I want to touch on again, and that you brought it up a little bit earlier, is when you were talking about like a higher management with short-term rentals, like a higher management cost, what all did you mean by that? Or what all does that entail when you're talking about a higher cost for short-term rentals?
Well, short-term rentals, there's two ways to unpack that. The first thing is you're responsible for that entire property in a short-term rental atmosphere. To kind of back up a moment, like a long-term rental, what your expectation is yes, you're going to have some move-outs every couple of years, let's just say. And your cost for that move out may be higher because it's been a couple of years. You may need to repaint, do things to the property to get it ready for the next tenant. But the tenant along the way is going to be covering lawn maintenance. So they're going to be taking care of bush trimmings and just general maintenance for that property. When you dive into a short-term rental, a lot of people, they see the silver lining on its own. They see the sexy nature of like, we've got this vacation house, but they don't think about like, well, I have to cover the cost for miscellaneous things. Like when people come to your, let's just use a mountain rental, they're going to expect to have some kind of cable television. You know, they're going to expect to have some kind of activity. So you have to pay those bills. You're going to have internet that you're paying. You would never pay that for a long-term rental. You're going to have constant cleaning and upkeep between tenants, which is expected because it is a short-term rental, but that is a big cost as well because just somebody's got to handle that for you. The lawn maintenance, the gutter cleaning, the bush trimming, all of that is completely on you. And we haven't even gotten into what I mentioned before, is just the cost is going to be greater in most cases with a short-term rental because you're in a peak area. You know, there's a certain amenity around you that's driving people to vacation there, whether that's a mountain cabin or the beach condo, whatever that may be. And naturally, it may vary with your exterior maintenance with a short-term rental, like say in a condo, because some of that's built in. But then again, you've got very high HOA fees because, again, nothing's for free. So when you dive into it, just know that everything that keeps that property moving forward in a short-term rental atmosphere is going to be on your dime. You know, yes, you are going to get a higher rent rate for that property. However, the vacancy in that property is going to be much higher, but the cost is going to be accelerated because you're handling it all. Nobody is picking up the dime.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point that you really don't think about necessarily. I mean, you're talking about the internet, like, in a long-term rental, you don't ever pay for the internet, but you have to provide internet for people right. staying there. Maybe not so much in the other short terms, kind of like your traveling nurses or insurance housing, in which somebody, you know, their insurance company has to put up a family or someone for a specific amount of time, like 6 months, maybe to a year. But yeah, you know, your short terms, you're having to cover all of that. So we've talked a lot about the short term. So talk now about the long term rentals. What are some of the pros of your long term rentals? And then what are also some of the cons for your long term rentals?
Yeah. So the pros, for the long term rentals, as I mentioned, it's kind of the opposite. You just run the opposite playbook in many senses. It's, you know, the lower management needs, because again, when you put that tenant in place, they're more or less going to take care of that property. That is their home. They're going to be there for a number of years. And again, I don't want anybody calling us and saying, well, I had a long-term rental and that tenant called me every day. And because that's, again, in a general sense. But, you know, your lower intro cost. I'm not saying that a long-term rental can't be expensive, because it's very market to market. We can't just cover everything in one fell swoop. But in the same market, a long-term rental isn't necessarily going to need to be by your huge amenity. It doesn't need to necessarily be downtown by the concert arena or near the beach or anything. So the greatest thing, and again, it's not a financial factor, but when you look at long-term rentals, your audience is vastly larger than it would be with a short-term rental situation, because you can appeal to a great number of, like, let's say I've got a smaller house and it's further away. Well, there's a certain amount of people that want that. You've got a property that's on a busy street. And, you know, again, I have to tell a lot of our customers, quit trying to hang curtains in the house, quit trying to hang pictures on the wall, because you're not going to live there. And just because you don't like a busy street doesn't mean that thousands of people aren't looking for that busy street because it's convenient to work, or the sidewalk, or whatever the reason. We're human beings are, you know, vastly different. So you've got that. You're less impacted by the economic shifts. I think that's my favorite thing for long-term rentals, because when you put that person in the property, I'm not saying that they can't lose a job. I'm not saying that they can't be late on rent or anything like that. But what I am saying is they're going to work very hard to pay that rent, because that's their household. That's where their children are laying their heads down. If you're letting something go from an investment perspective, you're typically going to let something like more of the vacation rental go. And that's why in many cases, it's a little bit more cumbersome, or can be, on the lending side as well. And that kind of leads me into something else. With the lending, you can utilize DSCR or conventional loans on both types of investments. And some people look at it and they say, well, I'll use it with a lower interest rate. Heck, I'll get a second home loan. And, you know, that interest rate will be lower. The downside of that is you're not treating that as a business, because you can't cancel out that debt like you can with a DSCR loan. You're limited to 180 days usually, as far as someone, you know, utilizing that as a rental. And it's just hard to keep the volume of funds going, because you're not canceling out anything. Now, if you just want to go buy a lake house and rent it out occasionally, and that's your thing, and that's the enjoyment of life, fine. I'm not telling you not to do that. But again, because of the steady or consistent income with long-term rentals, a lot of the DSCR process can be much easier to qualify. Because when you're looking at 60%, you know, occupancy, you can have a lot of peaks and valleys within that year. And of course, I love about long-term rentals, I don't want to deal with furniture. I don't want to, again, that's a cost thing I didn't mention before. You've got to furnish that property. And yes, you can write that off, but, you know, it's just an added cost for you.
Well, you know, you think about even the damage that can be sustained over a very short amount of time to furniture. I know my kids can be terrors, you know, they can spill things, ruin things really quickly.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I like to, you know, the fact that we can go through and do a deep dive into the screening process. Everybody's read or heard about the horror stories with short-term rentals. And I'm not saying you can't get a bad tenant with a long-term rental, but you can have a more thorough screening process in a long-term rental than you can with Airbnb, for instance. The good of Airbnb is that they handle the funds. You know, you just collect the money and it's easier, but you have no idea what you're getting. You just hope that they're good people and they treat your property well, and they're not throwing a raging party that's going to destroy your party, which has happened. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, and it definitely, like you said, don't want to take away from the fact that that is a possibility with long-term rentals as well.
Right, right. It's you just have a little more control over the screening process for that individual.
So with investors considering between the two, and if they're looking at all the pros and cons listed out between short-term rentals, long-term rentals, what would you say that they need to take into consideration? Like, what are the things that they need to be looking at in regards to that particular market, property, what have you? What are some of the things that they definitely need to run the numbers on and feel comfortable with before they move forward?
So for both markets, long-term and short-term, you never need, you should always know your market, know your saturation, know the growth that that market has seen in the last, you know, 3 years, let's just say. And not only what is the growth, what has the growth been, but why have they seen the growth that they've experienced? Is it migration? Okay, well, that's great, but can that migration trend continue? And so you want to know your market, and if it looks too good to be true in some cases, if you're getting sold an idea, just be leery of that, especially in the short-term rental world, because, you know, there's a quota, if you will, being that needs to be met there. And so the saturation is a big deal. Know your market on both sides. Really dive deep into your funds. Again, I can't stress enough. I'll tell you, like I told my best friend, recently, he said, you know, I'm thinking about getting a short-term rental. I said, no, you don't need to do that. And not because I'm against short-term rentals. I know a lot of people that have short-term rentals. It's just the fact that he doesn't have any rental properties whatsoever. And I said, you need to start out with something more consistent, more affordable, something that you can forecast a bit easier. And I said, once you get a portfolio, I think a short-term rental may be a better option for you. But you don't want to be caught in the situation in your first experience be the ebbs and flows of an economic shift, and that be devastating for your short-term rental, if you will. So know the funds are there. I mean, because so many people have gotten into, you know, long-term or short-term, I guess you'd say, and they just didn't forecast appropriately or put enough reserves aside, and they've got themselves into, you know, bad situations. And I would say that that reserve needs to be much larger with a short-term rental because, again, you're taking care of everything. And your occupancy can take a downspin at any given moment because, again, you've got to compete with those neighbors that put the pickleball court in, that put the pool in. And, yes, their occupancy may increase because of that. And if you want to compete with that, you may have to do something similar in that saturated market. It all depends on, it's very market driven. So the funds, know the market, do your research. And again, you know, is this in a worst case scenario, can you sustain that $500,000-$600,000, $700,000 property or more if you don't have the occupancy? So know your long-term game. And if you needed to pivot, if values dropped for any reason, can you? You know, that's a big deal. So it's, just look at the long-term play.
Yeah, that's a really big piece of it is that, hey, if you can't, if times became difficult and you needed to move that property to a long-term rental, could you? Could the numbers still potentially work? No, it might not be as lucrative or what have you. The rent would be a lot lower than the month-to-month rent would be a lot lower than your short-term, like weekend, week here. But could you still make that work? And also talk about the municipalities. Like we have seen such a shift in that. And that's something that investors definitely need to take into consideration. If you go and buy a $700,000 house and then the municipality that it's in says, nope, you can't have a short-term rental anymore. What do you do?
Oh, that's been devastating. I mean, when you look at New York didn't flat out say, oh, you can't have short-term rentals, but they made it so difficult to with the regulations that pretty much you can't have short-term rentals. And, you know, so many people were using short-term rentals as a way to pay their own mortgages. Well, I'll get the property and then I'll rent it out part-time and I'll go on a weekend trip or something or visit my mom or whatever that may be. But be very careful if you're depending on short-term rentals to pay that mortgage Because as you mentioned, the city can flat out say in any instance, we're not doing this anymore. Now, if you have a property in a beach town or a mountain town that vacation or tourism is a big deal, you're less likely to see that. Now, that's a given. However, you're much more likely to pay an accelerated cost because that is what, you know, that's what's driving that market. You know, you have to be close to the amenity, the beach, or whatever that may be. So that is going to be impacted more by economic shifts, as I mentioned before. But it's not just the city or town, though. You know, Sevierville, Tennessee, for instance, if you're a multifamily unit in that area, that's Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, very tourist-driven town. But they said that you had to, if it was a short-term rental, it was assessed at a commercial rate, which instead of 25% as the assessment calculation, it went to 40%. Even though it's still single family, even though everything's the same as if that property next door was a long-term rental, but your tax cost went up an exceptional amount. So you've got that. And then in California, I read that they put in a it was a tax as well. I have to look back at my notes here. But, you know, they just assessed a new tax for that market. And it was like a short-term rental tax assessment. And so just be leery of the municipality because they control you quite a bit. Whereas, again, long-term rentals aren't for everyone, but you're far less likely to have the municipality control what you do and tell you that you can't rent that property. Now, if you go into a situation where you have a very stringent HOA, they could tell you like the percentage of rentals in this neighborhood can be 10% or whatever that may be. But at the same time, you knew that going into it. You know, you had that control to vet that neighborhood.
Yeah, just some local examples here in Alabama. There, you know, we have the two major universities. We have Auburn University and the University of Alabama. Auburn is located in Opelika, and the University of Alabama is located in Tuscaloosa. Now, Opelika, a year and a half ago, completely banned all short-term rentals, the Airbnbs. Now, I think the minimum length of stay is right at 3 months. So they let you finish out your current reservations, and then after that, you could no longer rent your property as a short-term rental, which of course devastated a lot of investors. And then the city of Tuscaloosa, it just passed an ordinance where they have a specific location within the city that you can't. Now it's a pretty small area and it's right around the campus, but it's a small area where you cannot have any Airbnbs. And then on the outskirts in the city limits, you cannot have a short-term rental for a certain amount of days. You can only rent it for X number of days. And their permitting process is a lot more difficult and tedious than it would be if you were purchasing the property and renovating it and having to get that permit versus and doing a long-term rental versus doing a short-term rental. That you have to get every 6 months, you have to get inspections by the city if you're doing a short-term rental, you know, so just additional steps that while you're assessing a short-term rental, you may not take into consideration. And then just another thing that a city ordinance can just come in and do and require more. They didn't ban it completely, but again, like you said, in New York, they just made it more difficult.
Right. And a lot of that comes from pushback from neighbors as well. You know, you've got the same person. And I'm not talking about the tourist community with a cabin or the beach house or anything like, because it's expected more there. And that has its own set of problems, as I mentioned, with the economy shifts. But when you're in a neighborhood, for instance, and most of the people in that neighborhood are just living there and they have children and they just want to protect their home. That's the, you know, their safe place, if you will. They don't necessarily want a new face being next door every week or every other day. And especially when it was in, for instance, New York, and you're in a flat or, you know, an apartment complex of some kind, and, you know, you're seeing new people constantly, and it just, it's a fear factor for a lot of people. I don't know who's coming in the door. I don't know who has the key code, that kind of thing. So you're getting a lot of pushback from neighbors throughout that process.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. Well, Danny, thank you so much for jumping on and talking about the pros and cons of short-term and rental, short-term and long-term rental properties. Do you have anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, and again, I just want to be clear that, you know, our goal wasn't to bash short-term rentals today, or my goal.
No, absolutely not.
You know, there's pros and cons to any investment. You know, as I mentioned before, vet the area, vet the property, and go into it with a sound mind and an investment mind. But yeah, I appreciate the time today.
Yes, and that's a really good point, too, and that I also want to stress, and that this is in no way to deter people from doing. We just want people to be informed, because there are risks associated with long-term rentals, like you talked about. I mean, you can still have the property damage. You can still have the turnover. You can still have tenants go into eviction, and then now they're occupying a property for an extended period of time without payment. So there are risks, and we try really hard not to paint a perfect picture of rental property. We try to paint a very realistic picture of rental property and with the benefits and then the associated risks. So this in no way says like, hey, short term, you have all these risks, and long term, there are no risks. Absolutely not. There's definitely risks with both. So yeah, thank you for that. Thank you so much for joining us, Danny. And I hope you guys have a great one that's on the house. Thank you guys for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. If you want to learn more, check us out online at SpartanInvest.com. Until next time, this is On the House with Spartan.